Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. Cold case files are more than ink on paper in boxes on shelves in stuffy rooms in police stations or sheriff's office, more than blood and hair samples, fabric, fibers, fingerprints, photographs, and footprints, what is known as forensic evidence. Every file represents at least one victim and many more of their survivors who hope that someday the crime that changed their lives forever will be solved. Holly Zachariah of the Columbus Dispatch has devoted part of her busy career to reviewing the cold case files that fill not only those boxes, but also the minds of the investigators assigned to solve the crimes in Central Ohio. She's with us today. Holly, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me, Ann.
Also here with us, Kevin Miles. He is president of the Central Ohio Crime Stoppers. He works on the Crime Stoppers works on its own, but also with Holly, you have joined forces to bring to light again these mysteries in the hopes of turning the cold files to closed files. And Kevin, thanks for being here.
Good morning. Thanks for having us.
Appreciate it. A cold case, we were talking, isn't just an open case, or it isn't a closed case. It's, a cold case isn't a closed case. It can be open, but it usually involves a violent or major crime, right?
It doesn't have to. The thing is that homicides, you know, the deaths are going to get the most attention, I think. Certainly they have cold cases that involve everything. But the majority of the ones, at least in Franklin County and the city of Columbus, are the ones that involve a murder.
You wrote in your series, why don't you tell us a little bit about your series first? It's an occasional series, right?
It is. I'd love to talk about it. I'm very excited about it, and so is everyone at the Dispatch. It was a project that I wanted to do for a very long time and didn't have the time to dedicate to it. So now I'm sort of squeezing it in when I can. But I'm working with photographer Jonathan Quilter, and we're handpicking the cases. We sent letters to all of the agencies in Central Ohio and said, give us some synopsis of your cold cases, and we're picking the ones that we want to do. We've asked for complete access. So far, we've been granted that. We read every piece of paper that we can get. We talk to folks that are involved with the case. And then I write the story. Jonathan takes the pictures and does amazing video. And we're putting it out there in hopes that they can generate a little bit new information. I was thrilled. I called Kevin when I knew that we were going to do it at the Dispatch and said, are you on board? And he jumped at the chance. Gave us a generous reward on each case. We're using Crime Stoppers to filter the tips through. And the first two have been generated some buzz, and we're happy to be able to speak for the dead and those victims.
Yeah, Kevin.
We're very excited about this, and it's hard to say excited about homicides and how you get excited about that. But Central Ohio, there's over 900 unsolved homicides in Central Ohio. That's incredible. And it's only going to get worse as, you know, younger people are that stitch, don't snitch. And so any way that we're able to get it out to the medium is what we have to do. And for the Columbus Police, the Franklin County Sheriff, for them to allow the Dispatch to come in is pretty incredible, because normally they're, you know, it's a tight, you know, clip group. She's able to get information that's, if you go to, you know, go to the Dispatch, you go to our website, you'll see some of the information that she's received that was normally not out there, and some good pictures. She's able to talk to family and give a different side that people have never seen or never heard about. So we know that people know most of these homicides. Someone has information. We just have to get to the right person. We have to tug at the right heart. We have to hit the right time. And by them doing this, it's. I think it's going to really – I can tell you we have gotten tips from the articles that she has written. Can't tell you if any of them are any good. That's mm-hmm. up to the police to do that. But some of the stuff that I've seen has been – I thought, you know, and I'm not a detective, I thought was pretty good.
If you're just joining us, my guests are Holly Zachariah of the Columbus Dispatch and also Kevin Miles, president of the Central Ohio Crime Stoppers. Holly, how do you pick which cases you are going to highlight? And is it possible that that might change over time, that one you overlooked before might pop up? I mean, this is an occasional series. It means it could go on indefinitely.
Absolutely. I think that when the editors at the Dispatch, when we all met the last time, we decided as long as agencies were willing to cooperate with us and people seemed interested and we were doing a public service and generating tips, our commitment was to continue Killers Among Us, which is the name of the series, as long as as we can do it and as long as people are interested. And how we pick them, again, I asked every agency to give me a synopsis of the ones they thought they had the best chance of solving. That tends to be the cases that there's DNA evidence in. That technology is changing so rapidly. So they tended to pick either the cases that in the outlying communities in particular that the sheriffs are most passionate about. They take it very personally, particularly in those rural counties where they might only have a few murders that remain unsolved. And we looked through, I was at Columbus Police last week, and we were looking through a couple of cases, and I picked the one that I thought had the best chance of someone knowing something. It's a campus area murder, fairly recent, from 2000, so that'll be the next one that we take a look at. It's hard to pick because there's a victim in every case, and I want to tell that victim's story every time, and it's hard to pick and choose.
How much does it matter that it's a good story to tell? Because you're a good storyteller, and you can tell when there's something to say and maybe when there's not enough to say.
That's true. And in fact, we ran into an issue in last month, as a matter of fact, when we were picking. We thought we had our case picked. We were doing some research, and it turns out there was we went in believing that there were no drugs involved. Turns out there were some drugs involved. In deference to the family, the detectives balked a little bit and said, you know, we don't want to talk about this. And we abandoned the case because I'm not going to lie about what happened. We're tending to pick folks who didn't bring death upon themselves, so to speak. You know,
with risky behavior and that
exactly,
sort of thing.
Exactly. You know, if we know it was a drug deal gone bad, there's still justice in that case as well. As Kevin will tell you, there's justice. Every case deserves justice. But when you have more than 1,000 cases to choose from, we have the benefit of being able to pick the ones that were seemingly innocent victims in the wrong place at the wrong time or caught up in something not of their own doing. And that's how we pick them.
Kevin, give us a little rundown about Central Ohio Crime Stoppers, where it came from and how long it's been around, that sort of thing.
Well, it's been in Central Ohio since 1977, since the conception, and it started in New Mexico, and it started in reenactment. They were reenacting crimes, and it just spread it all. It's all over the world now. There's over 3,000 throughout the country, throughout the world. And what we are is a nonprofit organization. I'm a volunteer president. I've been in the position for about 10 years now. We have a board of directors. We raise money to help collect information to solve crimes. What we do is we're a Safeway, and the police don't like to hear this, is if you call the police department and you give them information, they have who you are. If someone subpoenas that information, your information is public record.
You mean they have to have who you are before they'll take the
information?
No,
they'll take it. But if they caller ID, phone number, you know, they give the name.
They won't hesitate to figure out who you are.
Right, right.
Okay.
When you call Crime Stoppers, we are not the police. You do not have – you cannot subpoena our records on it. For instance, the Julie Popovich homicide, we received the information that helped solve that case on it. And the attorney subpoenaed all of our records, actually – we had to go to court to say, hey, we're not giving it up. And we didn't have to give it up because we're not public records. We're not the police.
Not funded by the public.
We're not funded. Well, we some things are funded by, you know, but it's the tips that we generate and pay does not come from the government. You know, the city of Columbus provides us with a, you know, detective that works with us.
And you don't use caller ID or anything like that?
We don't use caller ID. We don't, you know, record the phone call. We don't want to – the less we know about you, the better. When you call us, we give you a number. That's how we recognize you. If you want the reward, you have to give us that number to get that information. And a lot of people don't want – they just want a safe place that they can give the information and not worry about getting involved, not worrying about reprisal. And that's what we do. So we work in conjunction with the police.
Yeah.
And
Holly.
We have tried to make that distinction clear, and we hope that that's helpful to people in Killers Among Us. We run – the Crime Stoppers website and their phone number and say that they take tips in English and Spanish and give all that contact information. But we make it clear that's anonymous. We also give the number of the agency that's investigating the crime and say you can call them too, but you're not promised anonymity. And I think one of the reasons that distinction was important from the police agency side was sometimes while they appreciate Crime Stoppers and Crime Stoppers solves a lot of crimes, the police will tell you, the police and the deputies and the detectives will tell you, sometimes they get just a little nugget of information. And if they had 10 more seconds to say to that person, you know, just one more thing, that might be key. And so it sometimes puts them at a bit of a disadvantage that they can't contact the person and ask any questions. So we're trying to make it clear you have a couple of options. If you want anonymity and that's what's important to you, great. If you want to talk to a detective and cleanse your soul, here's their number.
Kevin, do people usually want anonymity?
Yes. Yes, they do.
And almost universally?
Yes, they do. And they're very concerned and scared about that. And we make it quite clear that we protect that to the hilt. Again, we were subpoenaed. The records were subpoenaed. It was a chance that I was going to have to – in the Popovich case was going to be held in contempt of court. And so we had to go before the judge and argue that. And he did eventually rule in our favor on it. But that's how important we held it. I mean, we were prepared for me to have to – we were going to be held in contempt.
I'm surprised the Popovich case – now, when was that?
Several years ago. That's about 3-4 years ago.
Still relatively recent that you hadn't been challenged on this score in the past since 1977.
Well, we hadn't – to this extent, we hadn't. We've had people – we've had a record subpoena, and we've always said give them the – we have our attorney respond back to them. And then this guy went one step farther, and he – you know, because it was an active case, and he was hoping to get the information. And as we even told the judge, we don't know who the tipsters are anyway. In most cases, because we don't have, you know, who their name is. We don't have the contact information. We do ask tipsters to call back and check on, you know, the information in case, you know,
there's follow-up.
Their follow-up needs to be. But other than that, we don't know who you are.
Do they usually call back as you ask?
Yes, they do. Mm-hmm.
How often – with these last couple – there's been two stories or
– Correct. There's been two. We're working on the third.
Okay. With these two, you said you've already received tips based on those stories that Holly and the Columbus Dispatch. When they call in, are they – I hadn't thought about this in years. I've been holding this in for a long time. What's inspiring them besides the beautiful writing that Holly does?
Well, that's important. Let me tell you that
she's a wonderful writer, by the way.
Getting the information and explaining it in a way that people will say, you know, this is not right, you know, and oh yes, I remember that. You know, more information you're able to give them is the more that they're going to be able to tug at their heart. You know, when you have people, you have to get to people's emotion. You know, you have to get to them and say, this is not right. You know, we talk about drug dealers and getting killed and everything like that. It's not right. You know, let's take away the person that was killed. Let's talk about the family that's left behind.
Right.
That's what's the tragedy of a lot of people don't understand that.
And they're still out there waiting.
Right.
We're going to have to take a quick break right now, and then we'll return to our conversation with Holly Zachariah of the Columbus Dispatch and Kevin Miles of Central Ohio Crime Stoppers. If you have a question or comment, we'd love to hear them. Give us a call, 614-292-8513, or you can email us at allsides@wosu.org. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on WOSU 820 NPR News.
Good morning from WOSU 820 NPR News. Get the latest information from WOSU the way you want it, daily, biweekly, or monthly. Go to wosu.org/email to sign up for one of WOSU's e-newsletters. And remember, you can listen to All Sides with Ann Fisher anytime with the online archive. Podcast new and archived shows from all the guests and topics. Podcast All Sides at wosu.org/allsides. 27 degrees in downtown Columbus under cloudy skies. There is a good chance of a little snow this afternoon, an accumulation of less than an inch and a high of 30 degrees. Clouds tonight and a chance of a little snow overnight, a low of 24 degrees. For Thursday, mostly cloudy, a chance of a few snow flurries and a high of 33. You're listening to WOSU 820 NPR News. All Sides with Ann Fisher continues. Good morning.
Welcome back to All Sides with Ann Fisher. We're talking about cold case files in Central Ohio, and we're speaking with Holly Zachariah, dispatch reporter that has started work on Killers Among Us, her series on cold case files in Central Ohio, and also Kevin Miles. He's president of the Central Ohio Crime Stoppers, and he works with Holly Zechariah on this series. And they take the tips that these stories have generated. Holly, we wanted to talk a little bit more about that emotional tugging at the heartstrings issue with this sort of thing.
Sure. Thanks, Ann. I wanted to – Kevin was just talking before the break about making tugging at the heartstrings and making the victims real. And I think, you know, when you say you're tugging at emotion or tugging at the heartstrings or pulling on people's emotions, sometimes that makes it sound like we're manipulating them, and that's – we're not. But I think what I have told the families as they've graciously allowed me into their lives to discuss what's the most painful thing they'll ever go through, I've told them, you know, I have to be able to make people realize this is not a name in the paper. If they realize that this was a real person and I can make them real to my readers, then my hope is their conscience will get the best of them. And just as Kevin said, they'll say, this is not right. The name of the series, Killers Among Us, we had a great debate at the Dispatch about what we would call the series. And when the editors, when we all settled on Killers Among Us, one of the reasons we did was because even if you don't care about that victim, and I can't imagine that you wouldn't, but if you don't care about the person who died, whoever killed them is out here with you somewhere, and you should care about that, if nothing else.
That they've never been caught, and they've never been therefore punished, and
right.
They're not. Yeah.
Right. And, of course, they might have been caught, but, you know, at any rate, people, or they could be dead.
They're capable of hurting somebody else. If someone's already killed somebody, they can do it again. You know, it's that much easier. So that's the other thing you have to remember. You have to get them off the street so that doesn't happen to somebody else.
I know from covering these sorts of crimes in the newspaper business, sometimes people are very resistant to sharing personal details because they think that you are exploiting something just for a salacious one-shot deal. The crime just occurred. You're swooping in. How do you convince them that this isn't what you're after, that that's not why you're doing it?
Well, I think that I don't have to work as hard as you would think to convince them, because I think that my genuine concern for a human being comes through, and that's to my benefit. The families recognize, I think, right away that I really care. And what one of the things that has surprised me with the families that I've spent so much time with up to this point is that they talk about how people will still ask them about the murder, and they're mortified at how all people want are the details. How many times was she stabbed? You know, did he rape her? Tell us how you knew he raped her. People are, and I don't really think it's because, I give them the benefit of the doubt. I'd like to think it's not because we just want all the gory the details. I believe that in our hearts, most people cannot wrap their arms around the fact that their pure evil exists, and they can't understand how this thing happens. And so we ask seemingly inappropriate questions to try to get our arms around that. So I go in and I tell the families, I won't make you talk about that. I've read the case file. I know all that. I want to talk about why, you know, Robin Durr was Robin Durr, which was my last case I wrote about. Tell me what made her Robin. And they respond to that because people really, they want to talk about who they love.
Kevin, when Holly started the series, you're obviously a part of it. Did people start calling you saying, how can we get in the series? How can we get our case? Or Holly, I mean, did they start calling you?
We definitely, I mean, before I even got here today, I probably talked to four families today that Crime Stoppers was already working, moving towards this. We've got another project going on with the other paper very similar to this. We've earmarked special money for this. We've been developing a website. Actually, it's done now.
What's the website?
It's not out to the public yet. It's done. We've got some of the cases in, and we're putting in all homicides that we can in Central Ohio, because one of the things that we're also realizing is even though we might not get someone to talk now, they might want to search for that homicide later. So the search engines are very important to us now. I can tell you now why people come to Crime Stoppers' website. They're not coming searching for Crime Stoppers. They're coming because they're looking for a certain crime. I can tell you that they're looking for a certain homicide. So people are out there aware. So the more information that you can get on the internet, like when the Dispatch does something, it's on the internet. So if somebody wants that information 2 months from now, 3 months from now, it's going to be there. That's incredible for information out there that's constantly out there. So the website that we're build is geared on just keywords, and it's going to allow them to either contact the detective directly or us. This first time the detectives now are adding in, building onto the website. They can go in any time and update the website for any information or questions that they want to ask on the certain homicide. You know, it's just a good place to store stuff, you know, for 3 months from now, 4 months, 6 years down the line. It's there, and people might say, oh, you know, let's do something about it.
Do you ever wonder if somebody checking it is this person, the perpetrator?
That's what we feel, that when someone's coming to our website, either they were involved in the crime, they were friends or family of the crime, or they just want to check. Those are the
Or they know something about it. The returning to the scene of the crime mentality. Holly, have you had people calling you saying, do our story next?
Very much so. We have, I had a list of about 23, 24 cases I'd compiled that I knew I wanted to get to eventually when we started this. And I get letters, emails, phone calls from folks saying, did you know about this one? Or here, you know, tell our story. And it's very difficult because, you know, how do you weigh what's more important than the other? And I don't. It's subjective. And again, we're trying to start with the ones that we believe might have the best chance of there being legitimate and good information out there that can help the detectives solve the crime.
If you would like to talk with Holly or Kevin, give us a call, 614-292-8513. And caller, you are on the air.
Oh, thank you. I wanted to talk about a case that I was on the jury of where I felt that the Columbus Dispatch reporter, Jeb Phillips, entirely missed the story of why we acquitted the defendant. And it looked to us as though the detective didn't care about exactly what you were talking about, of getting the right person so that he would get the killer off the street. And
you mean as opposed to just getting anybody?
Anybody. It looks as though he took the word of a 10-year-old boy who did not see the shooting and just heard the defendant's name called out, because the defendant was one of the people around there, and his friend was apparently saying, oh gosh, you know, and then calling out his name. And, so he heard that name once, and he saw somebody running away from him, and so he identified it as the defendant. This is the murder of Mark Warren, where the jury visit was marred by shots being fired blocks away, and so it was in the newspaper. But the detective just talked only to the 10-year-old, not to anybody else who was around.
Okay.
And took no tests. He didn't care who he got. And this went on for 6 years. And they got one of the possible actual killers to testify against him. And they got him because he owned the gun. But they were trying to give him a lighter sentence.
Okay. Caller, did you have a question?
Well, because I really admire what the Columbus Dispatch reporter is trying to do, and I want to encourage the other reporters to be more accurate, but also the detectives to care about pursuing the correct people. And because there were no blood tests, no checks of any kind, fingerprints, anything.
Okay. Well, thanks a lot. I mean, that is a problem. It's been in the news plenty of times that people have been, you know, charged with crimes with, you know, weak or no evidence. There's been a very famous one recently. So thanks for calling.
The twin. Yeah.
Okay.
Thank you.
Yeah. Thank you. Holly, did you want to talk about that?
Well, you know, I don't know anything about the specific case, but a couple of things came to mind. I jotted down a couple of notes. One of the things Kevin and I were talking about before we came in here today was the persona of a detective. And I think that, you know, they have a job to do. They're trained to do it. And one of the fascinating things that I've learned in this series is I've been doing this. I've been a reporter for 22 years. And as much as I think I know, it has really allowed me into the minds of these detectives a little bit. And their jobs are amazing, amazingly difficult. And I think that that it's a shame that they don't get the credit they deserve. The second thing it brought to mind was, I mentioned that they're giving me full access to the cases, And even with that, and I use full in quotation marks. Mm-hmm. I know there are some things that I'm not getting, but I'm getting the majority of it. And we never know everything, as in a trial.
They wouldn't
they
give
know
you information
everything.
That would compromise the case,
absolutely.
In other words.
And we're actually doing... We're operating outside our normal bounds a bit. I am as a reporter because this takes an incredible amount of trust on the part of the detectives with me to allow me to see those cases. And in return for that trust, I have told them, you need to be aware that my goal here is to not blow your case. And if there's something in here that you don't want me to use, I'm not going to use it. The integrity of the case is the most important thing to all of us.
But you also have to tell a story that people feel is fleshed out properly and is as authentic as possible.
Absolutely.
So there's a line you draw, too, if they don't give you enough information.
There is. If they're not willing to let me see, and pursue my own avenues, I'm tracking down witnesses. I'm tracking down. I know who the suspects are. I've looked for the suspects. But on the other hand, as I mentioned with the other case where we backed away from, we weren't going to say the drugs weren't involved when indeed we knew they were. That's unfair, and that's no way to solve a homicide.
Kevin, how do you decide which cases to highlight? Because you have your whole other Crime Stoppers program going on.
Well, if a family contacts us or the police contact or someone in the community, once we've been contacted, then we don't do anything unless we get the okay from the agency that's handling the case. I want to say something about what the caller just did because, I've been around. I'm not a police officer. I've been around for many years working with them. Most detectives are very good. What people don't understand, when they're rolling up on a homicide scene, that's not their first homicide. So unfortunately, they might not have the emotions that the people at the family might be feeling because this is their 15th, 20th, whatever. They're there to solve the case. They're there not to be their friends. They're there to collect the information. They don't know who's, so people tend to just say, well, they're not that way. They do care. It's just the way they're not in the same boat that you are right then when that happens.
It's a job.
It's a job.
Ultimately.
It's a job.
I was interested, Holly, when you in the first part of the series, you spent the first section talking about their job, and it was very enlightening, and it was very interesting to hear their point of view and to know, particularly the guys who are assigned to the cold case files, how committed they are.
I thought it was incredibly interesting, and I learned so much that I didn't know. And one of the things that surprised me the most was that I think the general public, particularly with our obsession with crime solving, everyone thinks they're a detective now, first of all. And everyone thinks they can be the one to solve the crimes because they watch CSI Miami and every Friday night.
Well, and every other incarnation of that.
Absolutely. One of the things I learned from the detectives was that I assumed going in that most of these cases had no suspect. I thought a cold case meant we don't know who did it. It's sitting there. Our information has dried up. And in reality, I don't know a percentage, but at least at Franklin County Sheriff's Office, for example, where there are 53 cold cases in one room, they believe the majority of those. They have a very good suspect. They believe they know who did it or a couple of options, and they don't have what they need because knowing who did it and proving it in court are two very different things. So they need hard evidence and they need people. They need people and their information.
It's like a puzzle. It takes a lot of pieces to make their case. So you're right. They absolutely, in most cases, have an idea, but they need the pieces to put together.
And I think that I talked to Sergeant Jeff Saxtetter at length at Columbus Police, who, again, has been super and cooperative in this series and is a big advocate of what we're doing. And I talked to him about, some of their – how a cold case detective does their job. Because I went to Grandview Heights, for example, and went through a couple of cases. One was from 1971, and it was literally – boxes and boxes and boxes of sticky notes, names on a sticky note, names on bar napkins. How does a detective inherit that 30 some years later and make any sense of it? So what they do, how they reprocess information, track down witnesses year after year is fascinating. And of course, DNA has changed everything.
Yeah, Kevin, even in the last 10 years since you've been working at this.
We've got a case right now out of Delaware, and this is – I'm a little bit disappointed with the attorney general. We have a case that a guy's getting ready to get out of jail on been in jail for about 10 years. They have DNA. They believe he was involved in this other murder, but it's so backed up. The DNA database is so backed up that this guy might get out of jail before they're able to process his DNA. And they pretty much feel that this guy was involved with the homicide.
So you're saying the attorney general's office could expedite?
There's no doubt.
Okay. And this backup, of course, has occurred for many, many years. It was long
before. But when you have someone getting ready to get out of jail and the agency, the sheriff out of Delaware, feels that this guy is probably the – that needs to be kicked up a notch. And you know, they're coming to they're coming to us to ask us to help the force the move on. Mm-hmm. Those are things that you wonder, well, why is this going on?
Mm-hmm.
You know, why is this going on?
You know, it's funny because another thing about those shows on television, everything seems to happen in minutes or at the worst, you can imagine hours. Nothing goes on for years.
Right.
And in fact, a lot of these cases they are investigating it for years.
And I think really the time frame is what spurred me and spurred the dispatch to move forward with this series when we did. I had a case in 2008 and 2009, Jessica Lynn Keene, a former Westland High School cheerleader, snatched from a bus stop here in Columbus. And 17 years went by, and the BCI detective, Greg Costas, had been relentless in pursuit of that
case.
He
did an excellent job on that case.
And he continued to resubmit evidence and ask over and over, he and Madison County Sheriff Jim Sabin, because the body was found in Madison County. And eventually, in I believe it was late 2008, May 2008, a lab technician out to BCI, the sample, the DNA sample, was essentially gone. They still had the vial. Technology had improved. They tested and tested over the years, found a way to get a little bit more out of the vial, really thought outside the box. And they got a hit to a man who had served time in an Ohio prison, and they solved that case. And I got to know that family. I spent a lot of time with that family, spent a lot of time with Agent Costas. And I really began, I was obsessed a bit about someone waiting 17 years for justice and not knowing who killed their daughter, why and how. And really, the story prompted me to get moving forward on this series because I saw that it didn't just destroy – he didn't just kill Jessica Lynn Keene. It destroyed that family. Mm-hmm. They are – it destroyed them.
You know, you bring up one aspect I want to mention before we go on break, and that is that there's been DNA around for a long time, but really the big turning point was when they started to require violent criminals to submit their DNA now once they're incarcerated. And that's relatively recent.
And it's not even violent. We had a major case where a guy didn't – it was a felony because he didn't pay his child support, and he was arrested. And when you're arrested on a felony, you have to give your DNA.
It's a felony then.
Right.
Okay. We're going to have to take a quick break. My guest, Holly Zachariah, the dispatch reporter that is producing the Killers Among Us series for the Columbus Dispatch, and also Kevin Miles. He's president of Central Ohio Crime Stoppers. You can talk to him. Give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on WOSU 820 NPR News.
The Afghan Taliban's top military commander has been captured in a secret operation carried out jointly between the U.S. and Pakistan. On the next Fresh Air, Pakistani journalist Ahmed Rashid tells us about the implications of Mullah Abdul Ghani Baradar's capture. And we'll talk about the new U.S. military offensive in Marja, Afghanistan, and secret negotiations with the Taliban. Join us.
And Fresh Air begins in 20 minutes. It starts at noon right here on WOSU 820 NPR News. Tonight at 8 on WOSU TV, in the second of a three-part series, join acclaimed scholar Dr. Henry Gates as he explores the faces of America. Gates looks beyond the Black experience to the wider immigrant experience when he unravels the American tapestry, following the threads of his guests' lives back to the earliest origins around the globe. Watch Faces of America tonight at 8 on WOSU TV. 27 degrees in downtown Columbus, cloudy skies, and a good chance of a little snow this afternoon, a high of 30 degrees. Clouds tonight and a chance of a little snow overnight, a low of 24. Mostly cloudy for Thursday. There is a chance of a few snow flurries on Thursday, a high of 33 degrees. And then a little sunshine as we look ahead to Friday. All Sides with Ann Fisher continues on WOSU 820 NPR News. Thanks for joining us.
Welcome back to All Sides with Ann Fisher. We're talking about cold case files in Central Ohio. My guests are Kevin Miles. He's president of Central Ohio Crime Stoppers, and also Holly Zachariah. She is the reporter at the Columbus Dispatch that started the series Killers Among Us. She's done two stories so far. We talked about the one that inspired her to move forward with the series. There are a couple other ones, though, and all of them are very, very sad. The first one that you wrote about in the series was Amy Hooper. Holly, tell us about Amy.
That's right. Amy was 20 years old and, by all accounts, had her life together, had a job that she loved. She was a manager of the leather store at Westland Mall. And had that weekend, she was killed on, I believe it was a Monday, and that weekend had gotten engaged to her boyfriend, who was a Bowling Green State University student. Two sisters, a loving family, had just rented her apartment February 17th.
And what year?
Of 1991, okay. I think. 1992, I'm sorry.
So there's a pop quiz there. I didn't mean to.
It was 1992. And February 17th, she rented that apartment, and March 9th, they found her body. She didn't show up for work. And her that's unusual. She'd never missed a day of work. She was very upwardly mobile in retail. And they called her mother because her mom, who was a school teacher then, was listed as her emergency contact. And the mother said, and as you know from your years in the newspaper business, and you hear over and over again, you know, the mother just knows.
Right.
And she said she knew then when she didn't show up for work, something terrible had happened. And she called Amy's father, and he actually went to the apartment. The maintenance man and Amy's father went in and found her on the floor of the upstairs room, seemingly getting ready for work. Her electric blanket was still on. She was sleeping on a pull-out couch at the time. Her electric blanket was on. She had a hair dryer out. So she was up getting ready for work, they believe, and someone came into her apartment and killed her.
And that's all we know.
That's really all they know. The family and the detectives have, you know, different theories, as is often the case. I mean, the detectives are fairly confident it was someone who knew her probably pretty well. She might have even let them in the apartment because the maintenance man had gone in. I don't think they ever determined for certain. There were no signs of forced entry. Mm-hmm. Maybe the family likes to think she probably had her door unlocked. They believe she was just young, naive, and perhaps had her door unlocked. And there was a key to that case. Her body had been displayed, they believe. The detective, the original detective on the case, believed that she was sort of laid out on the floor of her apartment, and there was a medallion that she was sort of, it was loosely over her hands. And they often thought that that was going to be the key to the case. And there's DNA evidence. If they can get someone to say some valuable information, it's a case that would be easily solved.
Which would give them the power to go after the DNA in the suspect.
Absolutely. If they
you
could
can't
get
just
a name,
ask anybody for their DNA.
That's right. If they could get a name.
Or if the person's been arrested. And that's the other problem that they're having at the Attorney General's office. They have this DNA, but they have to submit it and has to go through. So what they're doing is they're responding to problems right now. They're not able to go back and, you know, so they could have already had the person been arrested, and that DNA could be on, but they just haven't matched it yet with what's happening.
And that's a real issue. That's a federal problem.
Yes.
You know, every state has the issue. We now have the technology. We're collecting the DNA. You know, the Attorney General's office and their system is constantly cycling through, but there's still more to do, obviously.
And it all costs money. I mean,
yes,
you know, and at this day and age, we have the technology, but we don't have any extra money.
Of course.
There's another case. By the way, call listeners, give us a call if you want to talk about this, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. We welcome your questions or comments. There's the Robin Durer case. That's 30 years old. And yet you wrote about that because there is hope for a breakthrough, apparently.
Again, there's some DNA evidence in that case. And that one we picked because it really – she had some developmental disabilities. And I went out – and you mentioned the time frame on that. Robin Durer was 19. She was killed September 9th, 1981. And I went out to that area of just near Obetz. Out of her family lived on Reese Road. So right at Reese and Lockbourne Road down on the – on the southern side of Franklin County. I went out to that area and I knocked on doors because she'd gone to a little neighborhood store and never came home. They found her body. And I knocked on doors and people still remembered her. It's an area that's changed very little. And the neighbors still remembered Robin riding her bike by, and she was just so innocent and because of her mild developmental disabilities, that really tore the detectives up, that someone took advantage of the fact that she believed everyone was a friend. She was not the kind of – she didn't have the ability to believe that anyone would be able – would hurt her.
And what we find is that people that commit a crime sooner or later do talk about it to somebody. You know, I can tell you that we had a woman that was missing out a little Turtle area, and they ended up – I think she worked for the Limited, and she just was missing. There was blood in her apartment. And several years after the case, the guys that did it told somebody who then told us, who then unfortunately we found, you know, that she had been killed on it. We had it just recently. We had a man that had committed a rape, was found guilty, was on the run for 20 years. We found his picture. We put it out there. And somebody, you know, once it got back out there, you know, somebody called and gave us the address where he was at. He'd been in Columbus the whole time on it.
Kevin, how did you get into this?
You know, I just was several years ago, back in 85, 86, was asked to get involved with Crime Stoppers to help raise money because they were having a funding problem. It really became really important to me 5 years ago. My father was killed in Washington, D.C., 76-year-old man gone to the bank to cash a check and in the parking lot was killed. And homicides, I've really, you know, I mean, it affects you. I mean, it affects you. And I know what families are going through. I see and hear. There's a great organization called Parents of Murdered Children.
Right.
On it, and they do an incredible job working with families on it. And I've had the opportunity to meet and talk with them. And I just know that A, someone's out there that can do it again, and I don't want anybody else to have to go through what other families are going through. And so homicides have really become something that we've become really active in. The police have to understand, and the community have to understand, they can't solve all the crimes themselves. They do need the help of the media. They do need the help of the community. The community has to understand, unless you stand up, speak out, it's not going to get better on it. And we've got a serious problem, a couple of things that are going on with the, you know, don't snitch, don't tell. We were talking earlier, one of the things that concerns me, this is the cold cases in Columbus, Sergeant Stacksetter, who's done an incredible job in keeping, you know, cold cases open, and he's a pit bull. I mean, he is on your case. He's relentless. He'll stand up. He's retiring. He's got to retire, mandatory, because he's under that drop program on it. Who's going to replace him? I don't see anybody there. There's good other detectives there, you know. I'm not saying that, but I don't see anybody that's going to do
that. It takes a
that.
Special person.
And he's that special person that Columbus Police is fortunate to have. So when he's gone, you know, that's going to become a void. And unfortunately, sometimes it takes a while to fill that void.
You said you wrote about it and you mentioned it, Kevin, that there's 900 cold case files in Central Ohio.
Mm-hmm.
How many were there 10 years ago?
Well, you know, I'm going to tell you, 3 years ago is when I was given that figure.
Okay.
So we believe now there's over 1,000 since then.
Okay.
And it just keeps on, you know, growing.
Yeah.
You know, Kevin mentioned something that I think is really important and one of the reasons we're doing this series, and that is that someone almost always talks. And the detectives have different theories. Some detectives believe that it, you know, you have to be a pretty cold cat to commit a murder and never tell anyone about it. Other detectives say they know a lot of people that have killed someone and never talked about it. But the one thing that does happen is there's almost always a change. You know, even if the suspect has never talked about it, someone close to them would have noticed something happened. And one of the reasons we're so interested in cold cases is the detectives will tell you sometimes time is on your side. Because particularly in a city, a metro area like Columbus, where you're talking about street crime sometimes, alliances change. Friends aren't friends anymore. People go to prison. People go to jail. People move out of state. So the folks who had been protecting them now feel comfortable coming forward and saying, here's what I know. When you're not talking about street crime and you're just talking about in-the-moment crime, you know, over time, people divorce. Things change. And so it's, you know, we can shake the tree and hopefully catch the attention of that person whose alliances have changed. The other thing is, as people get older, they want to cleanse their souls. So, you know, people, I look at cases, you know, that are 25, 30 years old.
Not just the killers, but the people who are protecting
them. The people who know something, yeah. Absolutely. They, you know, they've held it in all these years, and they, my hope is they'll realize I have to say something. I keep going back to what Kevin said, because it's so true. This is not right. I have to come forward because what happened isn't right.
You know, knowing you, Holly, you probably knew well before you started the series about how many cold case files are out there. But when did you find out? What did you think when you finally crunched the numbers? Was it from talking with Kevin or however you found out?
You know, it was the picture that we ran. It was Jonathan Quilter's lead photo when we kicked off the series in December on the front page of the Dispatch. I did know. Kevin and I had talked. And again, I've been around a long time, so I had an idea. But even talking, Sergeant Saxtetter gave me a file that had names in it. And I counted the names. But it didn't hit me until I walked into the room. They have those floor-to-ceiling files that roll, you turn them, and the entire filing cabinet moves, and he just kept rolling and rolling and rolling. And it really, that's when it hit me. And I thought, how as a detective, when they're faced with that number of cases, how can they prioritize and go in there and just pick one? I mean, it really is a daunting thing. And Columbus Police has a pretty interesting, I mean, they have a written policy on sort of how they prioritize. And again, a lot of it's based on information that comes in. But they look at, you know, they rank them, they give them a number based on the credibility of the witnesses, were there eyewitnesses, DNA evidence available. But I was shocked, and I think Jonathan Quilter was too when he was in there taking the video and the pictures, at when you see that and you have to, and you process that it's not each one of those case files is a person. It represents a living, breathing person that someone killed, and that's overwhelming. It bothers me.
It was interesting that I can't remember what was in the sheriff's office or the police department when someone took over or came in and started working on them, that they went through every single file, every single piece of evidence. You didn't say how long they spent doing that, how many years that took.
It was Detective Chuck Clark at the Franklin County Sheriff's Office who asked for the job, which again was fascinating to us. Who would ask for this job? And he spent about a year, and it's all he did. And he read every piece of paper.
And everyone agreed this is necessary. If you want to start doing
this
job, you have to know what every case.
That's right. He had to know what he had, and he had to organize it in a manageable way.
Did he? It's interesting to me. Every fresh set of eyes would be a fresh portal to possibilities that you hadn't occurred to anybody before. Kevin,
let me tell you how swift the Sergeant Stacksetter is, exactly what you're talking about. He has brought in retired detectives, even from other, just to look over, review the cases, to do that, just a fresh set of eyes. Maybe there's something there that we did not see. So he's done that. And I can tell you, I know in one case, it was to their advantage from them doing it. So there's all sorts of things that you got to keep on doing to keep it fresh. And that's what the challenge is.
If you want to talk to Holly Zachariah or Kevin Miles, give us a call, 614-292-8513. Mike, you're on the air.
Thank you. I'm wondering if you have any information on an old case from probably the early to mid-60s named the victim was Mary Margaret Andrews. Do you remember that one, or did you look at that one?
I did not.
Can you give us a little bit more information, Mike?
I just remember that this was a young girl who was shot, and my most vivid recollection was of the enormous point size in the dispatch about this shooting, and it was a seemingly random crime. There was.
How old was she, Mike? Do you remember?
Well, I'd say 18 to 20, and my recollection is it was a 22 caliber gun was used. I just wonder what I think is remarkable about the case is that the dispatch gave it front page headlines in a point size not much smaller than that was used when JFK was shot.
Wow.
And it seems to, in retrospect, to show just how inured we've become to these killings.
That's a whole other show, a topic for a whole other show. And it's true. When does it stop being news that someone dies? And my hope is that that never becomes the case. But that particular case I'm not familiar with. I would have to go back into our own archives to see what they have. Was that a Columbus police case that was in the city then, I take it?
I believe it was. I can't recall. It was just a local girl somewhere in the metropolitan area. But you might be surprised if you go back and see a copy of your own paper that day, just how huge the was.
You have a great memory, and yeah. I don't know that one, so I will at least look up the name, that's for sure.
We have a minute and a half, so Mike, I don't want to take, but what has haunted you about this case all these years?
I don't know. I was a young kid at the time, and I saw it, and I thought, gee, this could have happened to me, I guess.
Okay.
I don't know, but I just do remember that large headline and always wondered if that had ever been solved.
Well, thanks for your call.
Thank you. Bye.
That reminds me, of course, of other cases that I want to ask you about. The two that haunt me, of course, is the woman that disappeared from the Honda worker who disappeared, 5 years ago or so, six.
Yeah, it's longer than that.
Actually, it was 2001.
Oh, how time flies.
Yeah.
And we only have about a minute. We have 2 minutes left. Okay, so.
That was Patricia Adkins, and she was a Honda worker, last seen clocking out June 29th, 2001, from her job at Honda and was never seen again. Literally sort of disappeared off the face of the earth. And Marysville is still obsessed with that case. I covered that case originally. And
I was your editor, and I badgered you about
that's
it.
That's right. You were my boss at the time, and it is a case that that certainly is on. We will be doing it as part of our series, and an adult who just disappeared. She had a daughter who she was supposed to pick up and never did.
She had a pretty good life. She wasn't running away, you know.
Right, and again, another topic for a whole other day. Kevin and I have worked on a lot of missing adult stories. Adults are allowed to go missing.
Right.
You're allowed to walk away from your life whenever you want. And because there was no evidence of a crime there, that really complicated that case. Everyone believes that she died. Everyone believes she died at the hands of another, but they have absolutely no evidence to prove that.
We've run out of time. I want to thank you, Kevin Miles, president of the Central Ohio Crime Stoppers, and also Holly Zachariah, reporter for the Columbus Dispatch. You can go to homicide.stopcrime.org for that new website. It's not up yet, but you can get it there. You can go to stopcrime.org for their general website for the Central Ohio Crime Stoppers, and also dispatch.com/unsolved. For Holly's stories into the future. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher. This is listener-supported WOSU and WOSU HD 820 Columbus and streaming on the web at WOSU.org, WOSU 820 NPR News.